page 58, killing of Narak Asura. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, actually Krishna had purposely taken his wife Satyabhama with him so that she could collect the Parijata with her own hand. But the denizens of the heavenly planets, including Indra, were very irritated. Without their permission, Satyabhama had uprooted a Parijata tree, which is not to be found on the earth planet. Indra, along with the demigods, offered opposition to Krishna and Satyabhama for taking away the tree, but in order to please his favorite wife, Satyabhama, Krishna became determined and adamant. So there was a fight between the demigods and Krishna. As usual, Krishna came out victorious, and he triumphantly brought the Parijata tree, chosen by his wife, to this earth planet, to Dwarka. After this, the tree was installed in the palace garden of Satyabhama. On account of this extraordinary tree, the garden house of Satyabhama became extraordinarily beautiful. As the Parijata tree came down to the earthly planet, the fragrance of its flowers also came down, and the celestial drones migrated to this earth in search of their fragrance and honey. So when you have something that is somebody's specific, let's say, right, you know, or privilege, if someone else has it, they get very upset. You know, so that's the thing, is that the Parijata is just a privilege of the demigods. Then if someone else takes it, then they get very upset if it's somebody who's of a lesser position, like that. So we see that that's a standard material kind of consideration. Because here, then Krishna being in a higher position, but because he's playing something that seemingly is in a lower position, then they're not appreciating it. But we see is because he is in his higher position, then he comes out, as Prabhupada says, as usual. Then Krishna comes out on top, right? So he took Satyabhama so she could pick the tree. Otherwise, he might bring the tree, she'd want a different tree, right? So she picked out the tree, and that, and then like that, and then that's the tree that's brought, right?
We know that the Vedic society is based on culture, but here we see that both Indra and Satyabhama, they don't follow that Vedic culture as much. He's irritated with Krishna, who is supreme, and she just by force, you know, grabs the tree. So how can we understand this interaction?
If Indrani wanted one of those trees in her garden, would there be a problem? If the source of Indrani wants one of those trees in her garden, is there a problem?
Apparently, yes.
Because they're forgetting that. They're forgetting these positions. Because, see, as demigods are demigods because they're basically Krishna conscious. If they were fully Krishna conscious, they'd be in the spiritual world.
Right.
So, those who take up devotional service but don't become steady in devotional service, they're the ones that become demigods. Right? So they're devotees, but they're neophyte devotees. So anything comes up that deals with their attachments, then they forget. But because they're devotees, when they're reminded, they remember. Just like devotees may forget about Krishna, but as soon as you bring up the philosophy in this, they remember. That's what makes them devotees, right? The demons, you bring up the philosophy, they still don't remember, right? Even Hiranyakashipu is talking Vedanta philosophy, he's still not remembering the Lord, not at least in a favorable way, right? So that's what makes them demigods, that's what makes them special. Right? That's their position. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then like this, because Krishna is doing these things on purpose, right? So that, to bring these things out. Because knowing that this would happen, he could not take his wife. But he specifically says he took his, on purpose he took, just so that she could take a tree. Right? So it's Krishna's plan, it's Krishna's arrangement. And then in doing this, then we see Indra's position. Just like you could say, well, it's not the etiquette that they stopped the Indra Yajna. But the point was, is it was not necessary. because they were in Vrindavan, they have Krishna. So as devotees, they don't need to worship the demigods separately. By worshiping Krishna, it's already included. So he just put things into their correct position. So if we look at it, that everything should be offered to the Lord, everything means the Lord and his wife, right? Because then Lakshmi, she's who you, if you're worshiping for the demigods, who do they go through to get to Vishnu? Right? Through Lakshmi. So then if Lakshmi wants something for the service of the Lord, then naturally then that would be the thing. Because she wants to have a nice garden, it's her garden, because the garden is not for her, the garden is for Krishna. Does that make sense? And so then she can do nice things with that. Does that make sense? Because there's always the what it looks like and then what it actually what's actually going on. So with Indra, you can say is it looks like they're correct, but actually they're not, because it should have been anything that Krishna or Satyabhama wanted, then they're willing to give. So, King Indra's behavior towards Krishna was not very much appreciated by great sages like Sukadeva Goswami, right? Because that's why he said, "What ignorance is there among the gods? To hell with their opulence." Out of his causeless mercy, Krishna had gone to the heavenly kingdom, Amaravati, to present King Indra with his mother's earrings. Right? He could have given them to Satyabhama, you know, so... which had been lost to Balmasura, and Indra had been very glad to receive them, because Balmasura had taken them, and Krishna conquered Balmasura, so technically now they're Krishna's. But Krishna gave those two back to Indra, back to his mother. So then they should have been quite happy. Right? But when a Barijata tree from the heavenly kingdom was taken by Krishna, Indra fought with him. This was self-interest on the part of Indra. Indra had offered his prayer, tipping down his head to the lotus feet of Krishna. But as soon as his purpose had been served, he became a different creature.
This whole thing between Indra and Krishna has a certain connotation, because Krishna is the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
Sometimes devotees take that approach with another devotees as well. So that doesn't look very good.
Mean put themselves in the position of Krishna and the others in the position of Indra. Well, at least they're saying that the other person is Indra. So.
They're
making
themselves higher.
But yeah. One has to know how to apply that. You do have etiquette, but then you have to see is what's the position. You know, if you're taking it from the principle of someone in a higher position dealing with someone in a lower position, then that aspect you can take. But to the degree that it's given here, that you can't do. But then we see is that Krishna, then what about Krishna going to Lord Shiva during the churning of the milk ocean, you know, when the poison came up. So with all the demigods and all that.
Nobody takes that position.
Yeah, no one does that. You know, or Ramachandra worshipping Lord Shiva before he's going to kill Ravana. So the thing is if you want to take these, then you have to take all of them. You can't just take which ones you like and leave the ones you don't. So if it's just about supporting our position, then that's not very good. The point is this Krishna consciousness is service to Krishna. So if it's service to Krishna, then it has a value. But if it's not service to Krishna, then what's the point? You know, that's the thing that he says here. What ignorance there is among the gods. Even though they're situated, the bodies are made of goodness, but the consciousness, they're still in ignorance. And, That is the way of the dealings of materialistic men. Materialistic men are always interested in their own profit. For this purpose, they can offer any kind of respect to anyone, but when their personal interest is over, they are no longer friends. This selfish nature is found not only among the richer class of men on this planet, but even in personalities like Indra and other demigods. Too much wealth makes a man selfish. A selfish man is not prepared to take to Krishna consciousness, and is condemned by great devotees like Sukadeva Goswami. In other words, possession of too many worldly riches is a disqualification for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Right? So they're having wealth, they're identifying as rich, so that's where the problem is. It's not technically the wealth, it's the problem caused by the wealth, that someone will identify with it. So Indra, he's in the position of Indra, but he identifies with it instead of as a devotee. While we see Balimar is in the same position, I mean, great, makes a much more intense position. Indra lost the Parijata tree, not his kingdom. And not only that, he gained back the earrings of Aditi. That's why it was the whole problem in the first place. Right? So now, because what's going to happen? His mother, where's she going to go? Right? To Indra. You know, why don't you get back the earrings? Can Indra get back the earrings? No. Krishna gets them back. So then that's good. He's given the benefit. But as soon as the benefit is gained, then he drops the position. Bali Maharaj lost the whole kingdom. But he identified as a devotee. That's the difference. So that's where we have to see. Are we identifying as a devotee, or are we identifying as the material position that we are situated within? That we have to be very careful.
That is why Krishna is telling for Shyamantaka to be kept with a pure devotee.
Yes, the Shyamantaka should be kept with a pure devotee. Because otherwise, the wealth in the hands of the non-devotee, or those who don't have that devotion, then we see so much trouble it caused. Right? Two people died, so much, twice Krishna got a bad name, it created so much calamity in Dwarka, because wealth was being held by someone who didn't have that proper devotional attitude. But now with Akrura, now we don't hear of anything going wrong after that. Like that. So that's the position, is that if you see that the wealth that one has in connection with Krishna, you identify with a devotee, then there's no problem. But if we identify that I'm rich, then it's a problem. Yeah. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, hearing that Indra fought with his worshipable Lord Krishna, Parikshit was astonished. Sukadeva therefore condemned Indra's character. Having asked Krishna to fulfill his desire, Artha Sadaka, to kill Narakasura and take Aditi's earrings and return them, and having his wish fulfilled, he then fought with Krishna. So he specifically asked Krishna to take care of this problem. Right? He then fought with Krishna, though he was the king of the Devatas. What anger the Devatas had. It should be impossible for one really in Sattva-gun to do such a thing. And he was the king of the Devatas as well. How dangerous is wealth? A wealthy person cannot escape such anarthas. Right, so they're supposed to be in Sattva-gun, the demigods, but we see is that there's anger. Anger comes after frustration. Frustration is based on attachment. Attachment is based on ignorance. So that's why then he said how ignorant the demigods are. Footnote 21. Nard Muni said, among all the attractions of material enjoyment, the attraction of riches bewilders one's intelligence more than having beautiful bodily features, taking birth in an aristocratic family, and being learned. When one is uneducated but falsely puffed up by wealth, the result is that one engages his wealth in enjoying wine, women, and gambling. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.10.8. Oh, so this must have been the Nalakuvara Mani Kriva. O Lord, my Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. Because one who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot address you with sincere feelings. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.26. Because what we require with those is going to be in relation to that. So we will approach the Lord, but we'll ask for those things. So when we're materially exhausted, that doesn't mean we don't have anything. It means we're exhausted in that we think that material things have any benefit. But we understand that material things, the only benefit is using in the Lord's service. So then whatever you have, if you have more, you use that in the Lord's service. You have less, you use that in the Lord's service. But it's that principle of using in the Lord's service that makes it that one is materially exhausted. That not mean here and there. That means you just don't see any benefit in doing anything on the material platform. That's the meaning of materially exhausted. Right? It's just not a thought. You see something, it doesn't remind you of, I can enjoy this. You see something, and then you think, I'll use this to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Verses 42-45. Krishna's conduct as an ordinary householder. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Then the imperishable Supreme Personality, assuming a separate form for each bride, duly married all the princesses simultaneously, each in her own palace." So each of them had, so he had 16,108 palaces, and each one of means the eight, he's already married, so the 16,100 palaces that are there now, then in each of these palaces, then they performed the marriage ceremony with that particular wife. Right? And he expanded in each of those forms. So each of them is getting married all at the same time. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "After defeating Indra, Krishna arranged to marry the 16,100 girls brought from the custody of Balmasura. By expanding himself into 16,100 forms, he simultaneously married them all in different palaces at the same auspicious moment. He thus established the truth that Krishna and no one else is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is nothing impossible for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is all-powerful, omnipresent, and imperishable. And so there is nothing wonderful in this pastime." Right? Because he's like that. The pastimes are wonderful, but at the same time, that's standard for him. Like Prabhupada said, as usual. Then Krishna came out victorious. So he's glorious and all that. So there's in that way, there's nothing wonderful in that. It's just standard that he can do like that. We shouldn't be amazed at how can this happen. No, he's the Supreme Lord. So what's amazing is not the grandeur of the pastimes. What's amazing is the relationship, why he's doing this, right? Is he expanding his 16,100 forms just to show his prowess and his greatness and his godness? No, he's expanding for the relationship with these different queens, right? That's the amazing part. Right? Being God, that's not what's amazing, because he is God. It's what he does in relationship with the devotees. Now that's the impressive thing. Yes?
So the Aishwarya feature would be that the devotees in that mood, they're actually impressed by his godliness.
Yes, so therefore you won't hear them ever saying, as usual, or that's not wonderful, or unless they're bringing it out from the negative, that it's not wonderful because he is so great. But here we're saying it's not wonderful because it's actually the relationship. But at the same time, it's not that we're saying it's not an impressive feat, because he is God. So the point is within the opulence is the personal, is that personal sweet dealings. Right? So it's not that there's a problem in having opulence. It's not that we're against opulence. It's the point is we're not in favor of not having sweetness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is that in Braj, it's actually more opulent than Vaikuntha. But because it's about sweetness, no one notices the greater opulence. Right? You hear of nice trees. Here we heard about the Parijata. Nice tree, can do all kinds of far-out stuff. Right? And in Vaikuntha, you hear about, Kalpavriksha trees and everything like that. Do you hear about trees that they themselves are solid jewels? The tree is solid jewel. The leaves are emeralds. Right? The leaves are leaf-shaped, but they're emeralds. And the fruits and flowers are rubies and other things like this in all those shapes. So the tree is just solid jewels. You don't hear of that in Vaikuntha or the heavenly planets, but in Vrindavan they're there. But they're just one of the features that makes it fun. So it doesn't become an opulence that anybody's impressed by. It's just about the sweetness. So that's why when Uddhava tried to bring out the opulence of the Lord, it didn't in any way change the mood of Nanda and Yashoda. In fact, it just made it worse because they thought of Krishna more. So he thought, like the residents of Dwarka, when I bring up about the opulence, then they'll switch from that mood of I'm the parent of Krishna to Krishna's God and I'm his servant, and that way then remove the problem of the, separation. But it didn't work, it just made it worse. Right? And then he goes to the gopis and it's even more amazing. So there he used general philosophy. Your standard, he's great and this and that. With the gopis, he uses technical philosophy and that made it worse. So then he decided just to stay there for a few months just to get that association, because you're not going to find that association anywhere. So, yeah, so it's being brought out. It means it's like that. Of course he's the greatest. Like that, but it's the sweetness that's the special. So it's great, but what's taken as great is the interaction, the rasa. So, yeah. All the palaces of the more than 16,100 queens, or more than 16,000 queens of Krishna, were filled with suitable gardens, furniture, and other paraphernalia. Right? So it's a palace, but it also has its gardens. Like that. Because you have to go out, you have to walk, and this and that. And so the idea is that the ladies don't have to go out into something that's not theirs. Because you have control of that. When you go outside, you have no control. You want control, but you don't have control. So it's not as satisfying as being able to go out and walk in a park that's yours. Because if you want to adjust anything, you can. Right? You go to the public park and you don't like a tree where it is, you can't move it. But in your garden, you can. You know what I'm saying? So they have that. So it's complete in itself. And then they may go out for different things. But in their own, they don't need to go out for anything. Everything's already there. So that's the whole point. So then it has suitable gardens, furniture, and other paraphernalia. So that means the situations of the garden, the situations within the house, and with furniture within the gardens, and then the paraphernalia that goes with all that. So then Krishna's taken care of all that very nicely. And to which there is no parallel in this world. You won't find, even Indra and that, they don't have that kind. But it's not about the opulence, it's about the wonderfulness and how they can serve Krishna. Because for them, having all that nice paraphernalia and gardens is just to please Krishna, because they'll spend time talking to Krishna, sitting with Krishna, serving Krishna. While in the heavenly planets, it's about themselves. They want to have a nice place to sit and facility and that. Right? What's the point of spending all that money and time on 100 Ashwamedha yagyas if you're not going to get some facility after that? You know? So that's why it's being done. But here it's not about that. It's just about that because Krishna's there with each queen. So now she can spend the time in these gardens with Krishna, sitting on that furniture, using that paraphernalia. So it's all about Krishna consciousness. There's no exaggeration in the story from Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's pointing out is that the grandeur is nothing special because Krishna is like that, but all these different things, it's incomparable, so there's no exaggeration. So you're seeing there's taking no, we're not trying to reduce it because it'll reduce Krishna's glories. We're trying to point out what that his glories are just who he is. He is the most glorious. There's no exaggeration in the story from Srimad Bhagavatam or in any other, right? So it's very important. There's never any exaggerations. Bhagavatam is giving the absolute truth. This is all the way it is. That's the facts. So the greatness of it is because it's Krishna. He's unlimited. So what does it matter if he went home with, you know, millions and millions of maidservants and all that with the queens, right? So you have a palace, right? It's not going to be small, right? A standard palace, you would say, according to Vastu, has 100 rooms in it, right? I think Nanda Bhavan has 100 rooms also. It's just standard stuff. You have to have 100 rooms, right? That's just the way it works. So now that's not going to be small. We're not talking about a Amsterdam apartment here, you know, where these 100 rooms are actually just various interconnected closets, you know, that like that. We're talking about, you know, nice palace and things, you know. So they have so many stories. The flags are, you know, way up in the sky. So standard, I think, is 7 stories. Is also a standard building because above 7, you don't want to walk. 7, you'll walk. Like you go to, you know, places, old places, like in China and Hong Kong, the 7-story buildings, there's no lift. If it's taller than that, then there's a lift. But otherwise, there's no lift. So like that. And in the Vedic point is that each floor as you go up is 1/12 less in height than the previous one. So that means if you're going to have a high ceiling on the seventh floor, what's the ceiling on the first floor? You know? Like that. So like that. You know, you're not talking about 3-meter floors all the way up. You know, like that. So, you know, so there's no exaggeration. These are all how Krishna has it. Then they have their gardens. It's not like a little backyard or something, you know, and then how you say, you know, you have your gardener come along and all that, and comes up in his pickup, gets out his stuff, does your thing, then drives off to do all the other houses. No. It means that it's a big garden, nice for walking and ponds and birds and, you know, the whole thing. And all this is, and there's 16,108 of these. And that's just Krishna's. And then everybody else has theirs. So it's Krishna, the unlimited aspect of Krishna's pastimes. So that's the point. And it's not an exaggeration. If we take it as exaggeration, it goes back to where we started in the discussion that we think our if it doesn't match our intelligence, we can't understand it, then it's not real. When it's stated that you can't understand Krishna by intelligence, he has to reveal when he wants. You perform devotion, he's pleased, he reveals. Then your intelligence can understand. But otherwise, if your intelligence doesn't understand, just know that you're dealing with God.
Satya's father Nagnajit, he sent 3,000 maidens. So
yes,
it should be like
it should be big. Yeah, and then there's the manservants, right? So you have both of them, you know, because the maidservants will take care of the arrangements, but who's going to move around all those carpets and furniture and rugs and everything that you when you clean the room every day? Like I saw, it was in Jaipur. It was set up, you know, for the, you know, it was one of the rooms. The room was like this big. It was just a room. And so you had mattresses on the whole floor, covered the whole thing. On top of the mattresses were white sheets, perfectly white sheets, completely covered. Right? On top of that were Persian rugs. Right? You know, and good quality Persian rugs. And Persian rugs are heavy. And mattresses are heavier. Then on top of the rugs was the furniture. So if there was a couch and tables, they were on top of that. And then there was paraphernalia on top of those, you know, on the tables pillows and all those kind of things. And you understand? So now that room has to be cleaned every day. So who's going to be lifting all that stuff up, right? The manservants, not the maidservants. You know, seeing it's in place, bringing it, what's going to be done, that's that the maid service take care of.
One palace will be the size of Maya.
3,000 meters. Probably. It'll be big. Yeah, because it includes all of their quarters, all everything, and all the arrangements for cooking and everything. And, you know, so it's huge. It's like I was impressed. We went to see... for their sustainability things, their sewage system, and the main ITC hotel in Delhi. So, you know, we've been in hotels. You walk in the lobby, and then you go to the lift, you go to rooms, or you go to, you know, some conference room or things like this. And you see that's the hotel, right? So what's interesting is that because we were going and seeing this, we were with the hotel staff. We went through some doors that you don't even know are there. Or if you see them, you never pay attention to them. And there's as big a space of hotel that is not the hotel. It's all the corridors where they do all the, you know, all the laundry, all the different management, the security, you know, everything like that, you know. So, like you said, it has to be big because there's the palace, which is huge, what they use. Then there's all the stuff that everybody else uses to run that. Right? And then who manages that? The queen. So, in other words, queens had to be really good managers. Because you're dealing with thousands of... And so one queen was managing bigger than an industrialist manages.
That is why one has to be really Krishna conscious to maintain the top.
Yeah. So otherwise, then how do you do it? And all these queens are fully Krishna conscious. So they're just arranging it for Krishna. Then it becomes very nice. See, then it loses all that that grandeur or impressiveness of knowledge and skills, and that's just about Krishna, because that's the real purpose. When we put the emphasis on the secondary, then we think it's the knowledge, the skills, the money, you know, the facility, that's the real thing in Krishna consciousness, when it's not at all. That's why when it opens up, that we're not interested in building big things and this and that. But we're building a big thing. Why? Because Lord Chaitanya said, Lord Nityananda said, you know, the acharyas wanted it, because then if it's there, it's big, people come. Is that sound? Yeah. So then to benefit everyone, therefore it's big. But for us, we don't need big. That makes sense. We're sitting here in a mud floor and a grass roof. Right? Works nice.
Between Dwarka, I mean, like Aishwarya and sweetness, Dwarka and Braja, you know, comparison. Can you not say then that when there is Aishwarya, you know, there is more efforts, and when there is sweetness, there is less efforts?
When there's Aishwarya, there's more efforts, and when there is sweetness, there's less efforts. How many maid servants you said?
3,000.
Okay. Radharani in Braj generally moves with about 5,000 to 6,000 maid servants. So then they, at the time after they all take rest, then she moves with, you know, her close associates and all those maid servants, and they go across to Govindastali. Right? Getting to Govindastali, then the first thing they are doing is finding out where is Krishna. So as they're going, so somebody's gone ahead, somebody's arranged, they know where Krishna is in Govindastali, because it's not a small place. Right? And so basically from what we know as Vrindavan, you know, where our temple is in that area there, like where the Parikram path is and the Jamuna on the other side, that would be the whole kind of area. Right? So somewhere in there Krishna is. So they find Krishna. And then they're not sitting around and twiddling their thumbs. They're going directly there. Then having gone there, then Radharani and Krishna will interact. First that just meeting and all that. Then there'll be, you know, that interaction and spend some time in the Kunja. Then, but while that's going on, once they've met, Lalita has gone off with the maid servants. A few will be there for arranging the pastime there. But they've gone off to prepare the sands, you know, down at the beach at the Jamuna for the Rasa dance. All this is happening in 20 minutes. Okay, thank you. In other words, never try to bring out the opulence, at least in this assembly, is greater than sweetness. You know, it's like in Ayodhya trying to say Krishna is greater than Ram. It's not going to work. That makes sense? We're in Mayapur. This is Vrindavan. So the point is it's the original place. Everything else, if there's work going on in Dwarka, that's because it's a reflection of or an expansion of the work that goes on in Vrindavan. It's just done in sweetness, not in... So the management that's going on by Radharani and her sakis, you know, immediately, and by Yoga Maya and arranging the bigger situations, there's huge management going on. But because it's all done in sweetness, we never bring it out. That's why you don't notice it. But otherwise, the arrangements are much greater in Vrindavan. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, Krishna's with a few of the Yadus and that. They sit in the assembly hall and all that, and Krishna's sitting on one place, and they're all, you know, in a prominent place, and they're all there and interacting and, you know, like that, and you hear that. But in Vrindavan, then Krishna's with the cowherd boys, this unlimited cowherd boys, and they're all sitting there, all in circles, and each one feels he's facing Krishna. So Yoga Maya's not arranging something there? So in other words, the arrangements in Vrindavan are always greater than that in Dwarka. But because it's about sweetness, you don't notice it. Does that make sense? That's why with what we're doing, let's say you have a Sunday program, is that not serious management or not? Means you're going to have a quality prasad, quality menu, quality service, all the arrangements so people can sit, they can eat, they can wash. You know, and all this has to be done in a very, very nice way. You know, people have to know about it. People are received. People are preached to. People get an experience. That's big management. But because it's devotional service and preaching, we think it's not that big. So therefore, we have to sit in a you know, conference room and then talk about management to think that we're doing some management. And then the fun part is all those managers aren't there for the Sunday feast because they're doing management. So that's the problem, is that Vrindavan has whatever there is in any other realm, it has that and more. But because of the devotion, the sweetness, the simpleness, the human element, we think it's less. And so therefore, in our striving for, you know, feeling good, having a identity of an expert, then we come up with these deviations, these distractions. Masters never have this problem. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful. It's a standard disease, and the modern means everybody in the material world has the disease, but the modern culture, it really has the disease. Like, you know, I say terminal, stage 4. Yes.
The difficulty nowadays seems to be with some devotees is that we gain that identity as the devotees, but then it appears not to be enough to be just a devotee. You got to be somebody within that Sangha or society,
yeah,
and you have to work hard for that, to retain that position.
Yeah, but
so the devotion becomes secondary.
Yes, but where is that position being obtained? Within the devotional field or within the material field?
No, material.
Yeah, so therefore, then, since that's what we left, why should we go back? It never gave satisfaction for unlimited lifetimes. Then finally, by Krishna's grace, we come to the understanding that it doesn't have anything to offer. Why should we go back to it thinking that is something special or it'll give us something? You know? It's not that, you know, that will never please everybody. We'll never have the position. Whatever position you have, someone has more. That's the first thing one should know about the material world. Whatever you have, there's someone with more. And then because of that, you'll be jealous, you'll be envious, you know, all these different things will come up. So one can't be satisfied. So one can strive for that, but like you said, it's at the expense of devotional service. That's because we're not taking up that practice and culture of it on a very sophisticated platform. In other words, devotional service should be simple. We talk, you know, the 60s or early 70s when it comes to devotional service. It can't go beyond that because that's not proper. But on the material, then we make it more and more sophisticated, even though we're not actually as sophisticated as that. You know, it's like sitting around with the teacups with your little fingers sticking out and thinking now you're high society or something. You know, it's like that. Because guaranteed, those who are on the top levels of corporate management in the world will never sit in four 6 hours of meetings a day, day in, day out, and like that to get their management done. They would never do it. Absolutely. You will not find one example. Therefore, everyone's sitting around with a computer and doing this and that and feeling that they're doing something great. But that's not what it's about. 6 hours a day is for sadhu sangha. That's what it's for. Seeing the different perspectives on what is the take on the standards of Krishna consciousness. Because that's the actual thing. Managing the standards of Krishna consciousness, that's then your Krishna conscious management. And just the day-to-day things like that, managers do that. That's what they're for. It's a lower level. But we've taken it, those knowledge and skills, those are the higher level, and the devotion is the lower. But actually, the devotion is the higher. Because who's going to be impressed by a manager? You may be impressed, but if push comes to shove, if you can get past that manager and be higher, you will do it. You know, that's the way it goes. So it's not that's the inspiration is those who understand the standards of Krishna consciousness, and then try to implement that and see that that's going on, because that takes way, way, way more knowledge and skill and organization ability than this other stuff. It really does. But not knowing that, then we take it that the other has more. But it's not. You know, because the whole point is if you're not managing so that the lives of devotees in Krishna consciousness go better, then how is it useful managing within a spiritual society? If it's just that externally, you know, accounts will be kept better and this and that, then how is that? We keep good accounts because if government wants to look at them, then they can see and that everything's in order. That's the only purpose to it. You know, so you know what happened to the money, so you know how to see how to better use it in Krishna service. But that's it. But if you think that's management, that's called an accountant. And in no managerial system in the world is being an accountant considered the top of the pile. They're the guy that never even comes to the meeting. You call him in now and again if you need to hear what's going on with the money. He makes a report. He's never part of the meeting. He never makes the decisions because he's an accountant. You know what I'm saying? Though it's popular nowadays, I've seen, it's a phenomenon. Before, accountants just did the accounts. But nowadays, accountants feel that they know how to spend money and how to tell you how to spend money when they never teach you that and you never learn that and they've never spent money in their life because they don't have money. They only know how to keep the books. But it's really, really popular. I see someone who's an accountant. They bring him to the meeting, make him a manager, and then he's got something to say about everything. Though he has absolutely no idea. Really, really unique. So we have to see is that it's the standards of Krishna consciousness. That's why these are so well managed, these palaces, because it's about Krishna, to have perfect facility for Krishna. When you walk in, it's attractive, it's beautiful, people want to be there. It should be when someone walks into the temple, they want to be there. They're happy they came there. They want to spend some time there. But generally, the foyer is the place where you keep all the junk that you don't know what to do with. Like that.
Maybe it should be done in management by women. Sorry.
No, I'm just thinking. The how do you say it? Kung? K-O double dots over L-N. City in Germany.
Kung. Kung.
That's the English.
Kung.
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 Kung. Yeah. Okay. That temple was run, that had a woman temple present. Beautiful temple. Like that. It looked really, really good. But kind of dead, but looked fabulous.
That's what
you're looking for. Yeah, yeah. Like that. So the whole point is that all these things have to be taken care of. And then it works really nicely. But so that's management. Because you can go to all that. That's it. That's how Prabhupada would tell. Walk in. Is it beautiful? Is it clean? Yeah. Is it organized? Is the temple program going well? Are the devotees doing well? Are they eating well? Are they dressing well? You know, like that. How are they interacting? How's the standard of the deity worship? Are the deities happy? Or do they look like they're, you know, trying to get off the altar? Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. That's the top man. That's what's the thing. And then the people who are there, they see that it goes on. That's the top. So if that's understood, that's the standards of Krishna consciousness that Prabhupada's already given us, then you want to use modern techniques or not, that's up to you, but you don't need to. Temple president may use or not according to his ability. But the point is it's not those techniques that impress people. It's not the jargon that impresses people. I think they have now, forget what they call it, but it means, you know, just like you have casual Friday, where you don't have to wear the suit and that, you can wear just the casual clothes. I mean, you have to look okay. Now there's the whole thing going on where it's on casual Friday. It's don't use corporate jargon Friday. Because they're really sick of all this jargon. You know what I'm saying? Well, that's the problem is the corporate's throwing it out and we're coming and lapping it up as if this is the Yeah. So we have to understand is that what Prabhupada and the Acharyas, what the Bhagavatam is talking, this is the topmost. If you can do this, you actually have the topmost. If he says, no, but what about managing? Someone who is a manager, then with this consciousness, then they can do it. But if you don't have managerial ability and you try to learn management and then say you're a manager, that's never going to fly in any sphere, including every last sphere amongst the karmis. Not one will accept you. Somebody said. So, if that's understood, that Braj is the highest, the knowledge of Braj, the mood of Braj, the all the different things, that's the highest. That devotional service is the highest. Then after that comes all this Brahminical, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra kind of stuff. That's so the highest is that Braj Bhakti, that mood of the Brajavasis, that surrender to Krishna. That's the highest. If that's accepted, then everything else can be engaged. Maharaj Pratyarudra is a king. Yudhishthira Maharaj is the king. So it's not a problem to engage all these things. It's just a matter of how you identify. Does that make sense? Like that. Yes.
Is the male servant also managed by the woman, the queen? The male?
Yeah, why not?
Is it because this is her house? It is like, they're like the servants are like children. Therefore, she can.
Yeah, but it's that in all this you have heads. So there'll be the head of the men's service and the head of the maid servants. Like that. And so then it may be that the maid servants tell the manservant head what to do, or she tells him what to do, or like this and that. You know, if there's the ones that deal directly, let's say, with Krishna, then his men will take care of them. But the ones that deal with everything else, then she'll ultimately manage. Whether she deals directly with them or not is another thing. But, you know, his servants. So. Like that. And we also have to remember, much of the time, all these manservants, they're married to a lot of those maidservants. You know. Sorry? Yeah, that's there. You know, it's worked out.
Some years back, you told in Chaitanya Leela there was a pastime between Srivas Thakur and one devotee. So one among them was telling that how Braj is only about.
Oh, that was Srup Damodar.
Srup Damodar.
Yeah, because you have Lalita Devi and Narad Muni, yes, having a discussion as Srup Damodar and Sri Vaspandit. Yeah, because the one is saying, oh, it's Vrindavan, it's just, you know, sticks and leaves and a few, you know, and a river and like this and that. About, well, in Vaikuntha, then we have this. And then Srup Damodar would say, no, but these that dust that you're talking about, one particle of dust is Chintamani. And Chintamani is the source of all the opulence of Vaikuntha. So all your opulence comes from one particle of dust of our Braja. Like this, and they go back and forth, you know? That there you have all the opulence, and you ask for opulence and use that opulence. While in Vrindavan, all the trees are Kalpavriksha. They can give anything. But the Vrajabhasis are satisfied in their service to Krishna. They only ask for fruit to serve Krishna. The Surabhi cows can give anything. We mean literally anything. I mean, it's just like that Surabhi cow with Vashishta. She generated armies. I mean, you have the emperor of the world coming with his armies. And she, a cow, then she expands her armies and completely destroys his armies down to the last man. You know, in the process, chasing him 80 miles or 120 kilometers. That's like from here to Calcutta. That he's running to keep away from them. And when every last man's dead except him, then they stopped, turned around, and went back. So they can do anything, but they only ask for milk. So that's the greatness of Braj. Even though it's so, it's greater than anything, that's why the mood of the devotees is so humble. Especially, you see, all Vaishnavas are humble, but you see the Gaudiyas are even more. You see, the most external manifestation. The mood is all, humility is humility. But the external manifestation that we see is greater than you'll see generally in the other realms. So So it's just, that's the way it is. So we shouldn't make the mistake, as Prabhu pointed out, is that some make the mistake is that it seems so simple. So to take care of my conditioned need for being special, then I go into, generally modern elements or Vedic elements to try to puff ourselves up so that we're special in this and that. The point is we should be satisfied with what's here. Right? We never see Yudhishthira Maharaj as the emperor of the world pulling any kind of attitude thing. Duryodhana constantly, you know he's a king. Yudhishthira Maharaj is a devotee. Does that make sense? You know? Arjuna only will pull the thing of being a warrior when it's necessary to give confidence to the others so he can perform his duty. You know, he has to tell them, yes, we'll take care, we'll get it like that. The Brahmin came and my cows have been stolen. 10,000 cows. So he says, yes, I'll get it back. If not, then I won't come back to the house. You know, all these different things, he says. Because then the Brahmin will be peaceful, knowing Arjuna's taking care. If he said, well, you know, I'll try, you know, I'm just a servant and this and that, is the Brahmin going to be happy? No, he's going to go off to Duryodhana. So he has to say, yes, you know. It's just the rasa. So in other words, it's in keeping with the rasa. But otherwise, if it's not necessary in the rasa, then they don't manifest it. You know, it's like, what was it? Is it Shamananda? He's there brushing, he's sitting on, you know, perched on a brick wall, brushing his teeth and that. And this devotee comes in and, wow, there's this yogi in town. He's flying around on a branch and all that. What a yogi, you should come and see. And he keeps brushing his teeth. And the devotee keeps harassing, no, you have to come and see. To one point he got annoyed and took the stick that he was brushing his teeth with, like that, and then sat on that and then flew around a bit and then came back on the wall and continued brushing his teeth. It's just like, it's just, they don't care. They want to see how the Lord reveals the pastime. It's this human pastime. It's about how it's going to go. They have all the mystic powers, but they don't use them. You know, because they're not interested. They're interested in seeing how Krishna works things out. So, that's the specialness. So they don't do that because then you only do. Then you only follow because of the greatness, the grandeur. Does that make sense?
How to get rid of this? You always
by hearing and chanting, by associating with devotees. That's why we read about it, so we see that it's not the thing. Otherwise we forget and we think it's, you know, we have to do this. Then we read about it that's not so important. So then we make that little step to give that up. And just we keep doing that, and then eventually by Krishna's grace that becomes the way we do things. You know what I'm saying? The idea is that if sadhana means there's some moment where you do that, and then there's a lot of moments where we're not, right? But we keep doing that, then there'll start to be more and more. So once it becomes, we're fixed, then that becomes, you know, a steady devotional service. So that's the prominent mood, though we may forget it, but it's the prominent mood. You understand? Before that means that the mood's not that, but now and again it comes up by association. We go to the temple, the program, the things. We develop that mood, but then very quickly it's lost. But then when it becomes steady, that's the mood, though we get distracted, then that's the next stage. Does that make sense? And then when that's predominantly the mood, then that's the next. And when it's prema, then that's the final position. See? Okay. All the palaces of the more than 16,000 queens of Krishna were filled with suitable gardens, furniture, and other paraphernalia, to which there is no parallel in this world. There is no exaggeration in this story from Srimad Bhagavatam. The queens of Krishna were all expansions of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji. Krishna lived with them in different palaces, and he treated them exactly the same way an ordinary man treats his wife. Right, so that's the whole flavor that's there, is that it's that rasa that's there, because through that medium, then they can express so much affection. Right? Because when you're God with Lakshmi, you can't express that as much, because everything's so formal. So here that has that informal. The BBT purport mentions, as Srila Sridhar Swami explains, here the word yata indicates that each marriage was duly performed. This means that the entire company of the Lord's relatives, including his mother Devaki, appeared in each and every palace and attended each and every wedding. Now that's a good arrangement. Now we were talking about the queens, but they're just there. But that means Devaki and Vasudeva could be at each one of these marriages, right? And all their friends, close friends, and that. So he I say, yes. Okay. Since all these weddings took place simultaneously, this event was surely a manifestation of the Lord's inconceivable potency. Srila Sridhar Swami further explains that on this particular occasion, the Lord manifested his original form in each of his palaces. In other words, to take part in the wedding vows, he manifested identical forms, prakash, in all the palaces. So that's the part where he expands, but it's the same form, same personality. Right? Because also you have your expand, and then he has a different personality, like Balaram. Or like when Sankarshan expands into the 24 Vishnus, they all have a different personality. But this is where he expands exactly the same personality. So that's prakash. Right? I think the other one's Vilas?
Yes.
Yeah, so prakash. So like at the Rasa dance when he's with each gopi, here when he's with each queen, so this is prakash. Srila Jiva Goswami comments to verse 42 in Krishna Sandarbha Anucheda 155. Since Krishna is all-pervasive, simultaneously, it is not necessary for him to create other forms for remaining in many other places. Rather, by his inconceivable Shakti, according to his will, one form alone manifests in many ways. With simultaneous appearances of his medium form and all-pervasive huge form, like a reflection caused by a polished mirror. However, a reflection takes place only by using a reflecting medium and without direct touch or smell of the original object, with the form appearing to be reversed and separated from the original object. The unique feature of the Lord's expanded form is that it arises from his inherent Shakti without a medium. Right? So he doesn't, yeah. It maintains the qualities of the original, such as touch and taste, and it arises by his will, by the power of his original form. The completeness of all the manifestations, expansions, is stated in Shruti. Okay. Purnam adaf, purnam idam, purnat, purnam udachite, purnasya, purnam adaya, purnam eva vashishite. The unmanifested Brahman is perfect. The manifested Brahman is perfect. From the unmanifested Brahman appears the manifest Brahman in various avatars. When the manifested forms emerge from the unmanifested Brahman, the unmanifested Brahman remains. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 6.5.4. Separate activities take place in each of these manifestations by its inconceivable potencies. Right? So it's not like the yogi where they all have to do the same thing. Is that each one can do whatever he likes. Because you have to remember is that you can say, oh, but he's expanding, but the point is it's all still within him as unlimited. So it's still him. So it's just, he just expands. He doesn't need a medium just through his energies. He just takes it done. Does that make sense? So he doesn't need the mirror to reflect. He just expands.
What? What it mentions about from the unmanifest Brahman appears the manifest Brahman. So like unmanifest Brahman is Asat and manifest Brahman is Sat. So from Asat arises Sat.
No, but why are you taking it as Asat and Sat in this case? Means we're taking Brahman, manifest and unmanifest, why would we use Sat and Asat in this situation? Right? In other words, it is an argument for the impersonalists because they're trying to establish the impersonal form as the main feature. But that's in comparison, where's Sat and Asat used? That's used within the material context. Right? But when we're talking about the Lord and his pastimes, we're not talking about the material concept. So then why would we use sat and asat as definitions of manifest and unmanifest? Just that he has unlimited energy, and through that, since it's all him, who is the person, he can manifest as a person there in that. So he doesn't need another medium, because it's him. He doesn't require the mirror to reflect. Or the pot, you know, the pots, all the pots of water, they're reflecting the sun. It's one sun, but so many reflections. He doesn't require a medium because he is everything. So he just decides he wants to manifest here. He is there. You understand? So sat and asat we will use when we're dealing with what's material and what's spiritual. But here it's all spiritual, so that where's the sat and asat? Does that make sense? That's what we mean by don't take the word and then use a different context. Is that?
Thank you.
Okay, good. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premrata.